Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
And I never would have probably tried Spam if it weren't for my dad.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Look at the meaty thighs on this Italian player.
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I was freaking brothers every way like MJ.
Zardoz.
How dare you, Luis Valbuena's a national treasure.
I'm a pepper jack guy.
Well, I most definitely have a throbbing Corey Kluboner.
So you're delicious and sticky.
Hi folks, at Manly Van Lee here, and I'm going to be bringing you a little bit of a special update, and the reason for that is because we have two podcasts now. We have, of course, the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast on the Fantrax Radio Network, and we have this, your beloved Nasty Cast, which you're listening to now. So we record both on the same night, which is Wednesday nights, but we don't want to release them on the same day. So Fantrax comes out on Thursday, Nasty Cast comes out on Friday. That's not set in stone, it's just how it is now. But anyway, the problem with that becomes if there's a major event happening on a Thursday, which, guess what, there finally was, even through an entire off-season of nothing ever happening, something finally did, that means we didn't get to talk about it. So that's why I'm here right now, just to give you a little bit of a brief update about what went down. You can also reach us on Twitter, at Manly Van Lee, at Nathan Dawkin, and at The Real Made, or on our podcast handle, at NastyCastBGFS, and ask us questions, what we think about the deals, etc. Obviously, you hear my thoughts right now. So two big deals went down, both with the Milwaukee Brewers. First off, Christian Yelich, the beloved outfielder from Miami, who is a sensual lover, which I've revealed in my old podcast, The Backup Catcher, which we'll probably talk about on the next episode. Anyway, he was traded to the Brewers for a package of Lewis Brinson, Eisen Diaz, Monte Harrison, someone named Yamamoto, and then another player, I think. No big deal. The main guys are Brinson, Diaz, Monte Harrison. Obviously, Brinson's a top 20 fantasy prospect. It's a big deal for him. It's a real downgrade as far as lineup and ballpark, but I really think this means he's going to get to play, which is kind of nice. So maybe you boost him up this season, but for his future, or at least his relatively recent future, it's probably going to take him down a peg because, of course, Brewers Stadium, whatever they call it, Miller Park, is really a lot easier to hit in than Miami's behemoth with that giant dolphin thing. Eisen Diaz was a shortstop prospect, middle infield prospect. I wasn't that high on him to begin with. Nate was. Well, you'll probably want to hear what he has to say because I don't have a whole lot of nice things to say. Again, playing time might be good here. We'll see. Monte Harrison is still a couple years away. Another really exciting guy and has a lot of tools. And I think this may be okay for him in regards to playing time as well, but you're not going to see him for a bit anyway. We'll just have to see how he develops. Christian Yelich obviously gets a huge jump for playing in Milwaukee because he's no longer in that poop-heavy lineup that is in Florida, and instead plays for the Brewers. And that park's really, really nice to hit in. So I think I'd bump him up a little bit up my boards just because I think the home run totals might jump up a little bit. Stolen bases will stay the same. And Christian Yelich was a good player anyway. He's been on my personal view forever. So I'm happy to see him get to move over there. And I have him on several leagues too. The other thing the Brewers did is immediately then sign Lorenzo Cain, the former Kansas City Royals short, center fielder. They signed him to a five-year, $80 million deal. And to be honest, with the Brewers having a payroll right around, I think, $34 million this season, now that they've done these moves, they still have a bunch of money to go get some pitching, which I think they do. And that's going to make them a really interesting team in the NL Central. They've still got to compete with the Cubs. They've still got to compete with the Cardinals. But the nice thing is with having these two wild card spots, it makes it worthwhile for some teams to do this, particularly a team like that who had a lot of outfield assets and still does. To be honest, they may trade Domingo Santana. They may try and trade Ryan Braun. They may try and trade Brett Phillips. We'll see. But it's a neat deal for them and kind of an exciting night for Brewers fan. So good for them. And get to ready and stay tuned for the Nasty Cast.
Okay, so as we were recording the segment that will air after this intro, which we are now recording after, you know,
it's like the Matrix.
The rest. Yeah. No, we're Tarantinoing it is what we're doing.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
Yes.
But anyway, so I received several text messages that are about Taco Bell nacho fries. Have you heard about this?
I've seen it on the sign, but I don't know. I drove by and it's like, coming soon, fries. Like, what? How is this a thing? What are you talking about? Fries at Taco Bell? What is it?
See, when I was told that it was nacho fries, I'm just assuming, like, I'm envisioning ground up nachos formed into like a fry.
Which is kind of what
seems possible.
Well, that's like what Burger King does with those chicken fries. Yeah. I don't know what that's made out of, but it's not chicken. I can tell you that. They're pretty good though. They're just these knobs of meat and dough and just fried, and you just shove them in your stupid head and then you walk away and no one's better off because of it.
I want to meet and shake the hand of the board of people that is coming up with this crap that Taco Bell is always coming out with.
And they're like, okay, so I'm on Taco Bell's website, and and I'm ordering takeout right now. They come with cheese sauce to dip them in. They are a dollar as well. You can't beat that.
Ooh, cheap.
But I'm just kind of reading up about here. I don't know if it really. Let's see. I mentioned the nacho cheese. Oh, okay. The most anticipated menu item release of the year will be available crisp to perfection with bold Mexican seasoning and served with a dippable side of warm nacho cheese.
Do they have fryers at Taco Bell?
They do now.
Yeah.
This seems like a lot of work.
I thought when I saw that on the sign, I thought it was just fries that weren't mine.
It's nacho fries.
Ooh. Oh,
hey-o. Ron Rigney.
Welcome to episode 139, everybody. The shortstop preview episode. We're going to bring on Joe Pizzapia of the Fantasy Network a little bit later on. Of course, author of the number one selling black book for baseball. But first off, we're going to do a little bit of an intro here. My name is Nathan Dockin, and you can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. Joined as always by Van Lee.
Hello, I'm here this week. I feel better. I've been sick for a while. I have not vomited. I was deciding what word to use there, but I think vomit's an okay word for podcast world. I think we've said worse on this show, particularly about, say, Ron, for example. But anyway, I've kept it all in. I've got a belly full of Tide Pods. And guess what? That joke comes first. So boom, who wins right here?
Yes.
Me, baby, me.
Power of editing. You can get that joke in first now. Wonderful. And Ron is with us as well. Have you eaten any Tide Pods today?
No, I said later, because we're doing this Matrix Tarantinoing thing. I'm fueled up on some. I'm starting a new trend, a new revolution, because I want to be different. I've had some Cascade dishwasher pods, so no Tide Pods for me. Van, I was hoping, I had my fingers crossed that you were going to do that with the Tide Pods. So thank you for doing that. The other thing, since this is the shortstop preview, I think my joke about the nacho fries earlier is kind of like the Troy Tulowitzki of nacho fry jokes.
So it's just kind of there. It's like 30th.
Broken down, you're not going to get much out of it. So, you know.
At one point it was pretty good, but, you know.
Yeah, it was good in theory. You know, you're going through your draft, you're thinking you might get something out of it. It might be a good way to go, and then you do it, and you're disappointed, and it sucks. So
I think the muscle fibers – in his hamstrings might be made out of nacho fries.
Well, poor guy.
Maybe that's why he has the hamstrings he has, because he eats too many nacho fries.
I don't think that's a thing. Too many nacho fries. Don't.
All right, for
absurdity to talk here.
Yeah. Is Josh Duhamel in a commercial for nacho fries?
I have no idea.
I was just texted that. North Dakota native Josh Duhamel from Minot, North Dakota, where I grew up.
I'm gonna type in Josh Duhamel because I don't know who that is.
I was gonna say we gotta check this
what?
Out on the Google.
Oh,
machine here.
Superstar!
I didn't know it was Duhamel. It's like Duhamel. I thought there was an extra little bit to that. So I don't know.
Dude,
I knew it was the
Transformer movies. Hello.
Oh, sorry. Hello. Sorry. Excuse me.
I mean, you're leaving out some great cinematic pieces here.
Mr. Pretty Face is what this guy is. He looks like he's in one of those shows on like NBC, like Bones or whatever. Like that's what that guy looks like. He should be on a procedural weekly show that no one likes, but somehow everyone watches.
Wasn't he married to Fergie?
He was, yes.
Yeah.
Until very recently.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're back on the market, ladies. There you go. Get yourself a Midwestern man. what the hell are we talking about? Let's talk about Twitter. Who would you hook up Josh Jamal with if you had the chance? Tweet us at NastyCastBGFS. You can also find Van at Manly Van Lee and Ron is at The Real Made. And please, if you like the show, give us a second, take a second out of your time, rather, and rate and review us on iTunes. Give us 5 stars, say some nice words. That'll make us really, really happy. And, any news on the Patreon front there, Van? I know you've been kind of indisposed recently, so I don't know if you have any new news on that yet.
I do, absolutely. It is up. That doesn't mean it's complete. Ah. It's very barren, but guess what? It's there for you to fling your money at, which is what we hope you will do. Now, you can visit, let me turn and look at my big board here, patreon.com/nastypod. That's what it's going to be, patreon.com/nastypod. Go on there if you think that we deserve money for what we do, and we do, because it's a lot of work. Then go ahead and throw us a dollar, because if we get a lot of people, we get a lot of listeners. If everybody throws in $1, hey, maybe that'll pay for my Adobe Photoshop subscription. So it'll help take the burden off of my pocketbooks.
I was just going to say that, like, if you're tipping a waiter or waitress, a dollar is typically a slap in the face. We'll gladly take a dollar.
Oh, absolutely. I'll take 30 cents, yeah. But I just don't think they let you do that. I think it has to be at least a dollar. But yeah, so it's up. I haven't figured out the awards yet. I got to talk to Ron because we're going to do the positional things hopefully the next couple of days. So that'll be available for you. But we'll have some more stuff up and running for it. But yeah, patreon.com/nastypod. Go check it out. Send us a couple of dollars. We'll give you shout outs. We'll give prizes. I'll do special things for you. I recorded a video earlier today, and I'm going to go ahead and get that edited and put up on there as well. So a lot of fun stuff in the Patreon world. Yeah. And don't worry, I'm only mostly nude.
Okay.
Can you say what that is, or do people have to check it out?
My nudity? Like, I can explain what it looks like.
Nude consists of.
Oh, what that? No, I think you need to check that out. Okay, Google that.
Fair enough.
Instead, Google Josh Duhamel.
That's definitely worth a dollar. Easily. Easily.
There we go. Okay, so let's get our plugs out of the way before we get into the piece of PS segment here. Van, what do you got coming out in this coming week?
Fantrax.com. I already forgot what my article was about. Should be out the next day or so. Yeah, I really don't remember. But hey, I'm writing stuff for there. Of course, we've got this podcast. So we've got the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast. So give that one a listen. I've got a new venture coming up in a couple of weeks with Fantrax alum Jeff Zimmerman and Rob. Oh my God, I just blanked on his name.
Silver.
And we're going to do a new podcast. It's going to be called the Launch Angle Podcast, and there's going to be some fun stuff with that. So we got a lot of stuff on the docket, So anyway, keep an eye out. You can follow me on Twitter. I explain it all there. And then I yell about Edgar Martinez as well.
Awesome. Ron, what you got going on?
Are you semi-nude when you're yelling about Edgar Martinez?
I think that's a given.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So this weekend, hopefully, I'm hard at work finishing up the over at Big Guy Fantasy Sports, the On Deck Circle preseason spring training preview. I kind of alluded to that last week. I'm looking at a hitter and a pitcher in each division that are pushing for a job that you might be able to get a little bit of a value in your draft. And I alluded to this last week before. I'm going to start putting these out next week, I think early in the week as well. Just kind of a series of, you know, beginning fantasy baseball videos. So if you know anybody that's wanting to kind of dip their toes into fantasy baseball water and they you don't feel like explaining it to them, I'm going to do that for you. So send them to YouTube, and I will hopefully do it in a nice little sequence order. I've kind of got my game plan set with that, so you can look for that stuff next week for me.
Very good. And this week's course correction is going. Oh, hey, actually, before I move on to myself, Ron, I saw that you were doing something on Blog Talk Radio. Is that anything that you wanted to pump up? Or I guess that's probably football. Huh?
Yeah, it is football. But I mean, I'll throw it out there. Joined Bob Lung last Sunday, and we discussed we're giving out the end of the season consistency awards. And so we did that Sunday night, had a good time with that. We talked about quarterback Sunday, and that'll be something that you can listen to actually live on Blog Talk Radio at 7 o'clock Eastern on the next few Sundays, because we're going to do a position a week, and you can always catch it on the replay on there. So we'll hopefully do that every Sunday from here on out until we hit all the positions. And probably if we're lucky here, our boy Colby Conway will be joining us there as well. He's kind of all over the place doing all kind of different things as well. So yeah, a little football stuff.
Awesome. Kobe's a man. So yeah, my stuff, my course correction this week is going to be on Evasel Garcia. So go to Fantrax to check that out on their blog. Yeah. Otherwise, check out the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast. We are amidst our rookie draft, our 2018 rookie draft for Dynasty League. So if you also have that approaching, you want to do a little bit of prep for that, definitely go check that out. We're doing it was going to be a 2-part series. Now it's going to be 3. We're going to go 45 deep. We're balls deep in it this week, baby. And it's only getting better the deeper we go.
Just like Josh Duhamel and Kristen Bell with the hit 2010 romantic comedy When in Rome.
Exactly. Classic masterpiece of American cinema.
Right. Didn't that win some awards for
something on Rotten Tomatoes, I'm sure. The synopsis. Probably. The synopsis says something about a sausage merchant, and I kind of stopped reading at that point. So go check it out, people.
Sold. All right. Kristen Bell's awesome, by the way. Big fan of hers. So anyway, I'm going to take a moment and go watch When in Rome. We're going to take a break here and then bring on Joe Pisapia. Enjoy.
Now nasty.
All right, welcome back to the Nasty Cast, and we are very happy to be joined by a star of the Fantasy Sports Network and, of course, author of the number one selling Black Book, Joe Pisapia. Welcome back to the Nasty Cast.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here, man. I just did half a dozen Tide Pods, so I'm ready to rock and roll. Let's do this.
Son of a bitch, I had that joke lined up, and you stole it from me. I'm legitimately angry.
I knew Van was going to say something about Tide Pods this week. I knew it.
I stole your Tide Pods, too. So,
I was saving it for the intro. I was going to say, well, I've got a belly full of Tide Pods, and I'm ready to go. And then Joe Pisapia comes out and steals my damn jokes.
That's why I'm a star. That's why I'm a star, Van.
All right. I'm calm. We can move on.
Take some downers, man. Chug some Zimas. You'll be good to go.
Yancey Joe eating back there? I didn't know there was Zimas around. I didn't know Yancey was around.
Yeah, he totally shit me some.
That's amazing.
Did he ship you Jolly Ranchers to go with him, though?
Totally.
Well, and let's point out too, if this is Nathan, that means there's probably also a pickle in his Zima, which is just as bizarre as it sounds, but something he does, I'm sure.
A spicy pickle in a Zima, that's where I draw the line right there. That's too far. But
I
anyway,
I would genuinely rather have a Tide Pod than that.
I want to see you transition out of pickle in a Zima.
You know what's better than sticking your pickle in a Zima? And reading his number one selling Black Book. Joe, why don't you tell us a little about what you can find in the Black Book this year?
I didn't think you could do it, Dawkin, but you did it. Very proud of you. We're the 2018 Fantasy Black Book is out, and I'm in full whore mode, as I always am this time of year and in the summertime for football. But look, it's the football book last year was the best one we've done. And I can tell you, hands down, this year's 2018 Black Book for baseball is really good. I mean, it's definitely the best Black Book period that we've ever put out. And I'm really proud of it. I got Paul Sporer, my buddy Paul, to do the starting pitcher profiles. So I still do all the RPV breakdowns and all that stuff, but he does all the individual pitcher breakdowns. And I don't know if there's anybody better in the fantasy industry at starting pitching than Paul Sporer. So you got him in there. You got Jake Seeley, who's my radio partner and also from Roto Experts. He's in there doing the outfielders. Sammy Reed did the DFS chapter, which is fantastic. Sammy's always somebody I try to have on all my shows and the radio too. He's a great DFS player and a great guy and a great baseball guy and just a funny dude too. So it's an entertaining chapter and really enlightening. And I got to say, so far, the response has been great. Went to number one right away. Day one again, not just in fantasy sports on Kindle, but also in baseball books. The first time I'd ever debuted at number one at baseball books. So that's pretty astounding. And it's just different. You know, that's the thing. Everyone will, you know, you get these stupid magazines and they're out of date, you know, because they go to publish back in December 1st. You know, people don't know what the hell is going on, really. And the Black Book is current. I mean, it came out last week and it's up to date as of last week as much as it can be. And I will update Every so often, but it's got relative position value. It's got a different way of looking at it. It really is the only guide out there that really breaks down strategy for each kind of format. If you're a points league player, if you're a roto league player, if you roto head to head, if you're a daily player, or all of the above, and it teaches you how to value talent accordingly. And that's the thing that's lacking in all these guides. Like, I can have everybody's opinion, all these stats, give me relative position value, give me a breakdown of how it's going to affect me in each league, and I'll show you a champion in each league.
Amen. It is a quintessential piece of your draft prep, so I cannot recommend it any more highly than anything else. So let's move on to some news. We actually had a real blockbuster come over the wire this past week, and that was Randall Grichuk going to the Jays. Oh, baby, that OBP. And they sent in return Dominic Leone and Connor Green. So, Joe, we'll get your take on this first. What do you think? Is this the value up or down for Grichuk? And then sort of break down the playing time fallout following this trade.
Well, look, I love this deal for the Jays because the outfield there sucks. I know they signed Granderson and all, but, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it's not a great outfield. They got Pilar out there, and this is kind of similar to what they did with Justin Smoke not that long ago, which is take a guy that's got some pop, who an organization is ready to give up on, and let him go hit in the Rogers Center. And you know what? It worked with Justin Smoke, didn't it? So that's a big positive. I mean, Grichuk is not a finished product by any stretch of the means. He's still only going to be 27 this year, and there's a guy even – I think if you look forward to he's only going to be 26, I should say. I mean, even last year in 122 games, he still had 22 bombs. So the power is still there. I don't care what kind of average he hits for. If he's going to get semi-regular bats, if he can somehow push the label to 135, maybe in 140 games, there's no doubt that he's going to hit 20 home runs there. And who knows what the other peripherals might be, where he ends up in the order. But I think he's going to get a pretty fair shake at playing time. And I think maybe the change of scenery was the best thing that could happen to him as well.
All right, Van, you have a different take on this?
One thing I do want to point out, and I always love pointing out this stat in case you don't know it, is that Randall Grichuk actually went the pick before Mike Trout in whatever draft it was. I think the 2009 draft. And it was both to the Angels. They had back-to-back picks. And the reason they did that is because they knew Trout would sign for whatever dollar amount. So they wanted to make sure they got Grichuk, so they gave him the higher pick to give him more money. So that's kind of an interesting tidbit. One thing I also want to point out is that the Jays do have a lot of pieces in the outfield now. They've got Granderson, Pilar, Randall Grichuk, Steve Pierce has to have play somewhere for the most part, Ezekiel Carrera, Anthony Alford, Teoscar Hernandez. I was really hopeful Hernandez was going to get some at-bats this year, and I still think he does, but it's a really bizarre position to see this outfield in, and I'm curious to see how it shakes out, but I also have zero idea what they plan to do. On the other side of it, with the Cardinals shipping off Piscotty and Grichuk, they've kind of cleared up their outfield logjam, and I think this means that Harrison Bader probably becomes the fourth outfielder, and that's kind of worthy of noting because if he takes off or if there's a bit of an injury, you might have a bit of a sleeper there in upcoming drafts.
And Ron, what do you have to add?
Well, I mean, it's kind of clear to me that they're not ready to hand the job over to Teoscar Hernandez just yet. So we got to kind of slow down the hype train on him a little bit. But he could be a nice stash in deeper leagues. But I think as far as Grichuk, to me, it kind of depends upon where he might hit in the lineup, which I'm going to guess is a little bit further down. But I like, you know, like Joe said, the park, I think, adds a little bit to it. But, you know, once again, you have to kind of understand what you're getting with him. You're getting home run power, and that's pretty much the main thing that he brings to the table. The other thing I wanted to bring up is do you guys see any kind of closer potential there with Dominic Leone going the other way to St. Louis?
Well, he's got the high strikeout rate. You know, that's something you always keep in mind with that guy. I don't know what they're going to do there. I really don't.
I don't think they're necessarily done there yet, but I mean, that intrigues me a little bit just to kind of see if he could maybe be a sleeper candidate for that job.
And the Cardinals go ahead, Joe.
I'm saying, just a guy that, you know, if you're in a deep league and you want to speculate on arms late, just from a holds and K's standpoint, depending on what your league is and how it all works out, it's definitely a guy to keep on the radar, or at least, at the very least, keep on some sort of scout team on your free agency and just keep an eye on that. Because I'll tell you what, if you're not going to pay up for saves this year for one of the very top guys, you're basically better off waiting and just drafting the high leverage eighth inning guys, because it's all upside. If one guy gets hurt in front of them, they become the closer. And if not, well, then you're still going to get some holds and you're going to get some ERA and strikeout numbers and whip numbers and maybe get a couple slop wins. And especially in April and May, that actually helps, because people don't realize in April how much damage you can do with some pretty solid back end relievers, because starters are barely going six innings in April.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing to note about the Cardinals, too, is that they're usually pretty quick to make a change if they need to. And right now they're lined up with Luke Gregerson as closer. And I looked it up. He's actually only 33, which surprises me because he feels like he's been around forever. I just don't have a whole lot of faith in him as a closer, because I feel like he could do what people expect a closer to do, but he's just not that great of a pitcher. So I don't see how that shakes out too well for the Cardinals in that regard. And I think they may make a move, but there is a chance, like you said, maybe Leon has some impact in that regard.
Yeah, it's definitely, he leaps towards the top end of the closer handcuff chart, just because Gregerson is getting up there. He was pretty shaky last year. So it's should be a nicer park for him to pitch in anyway. His, you know, he got just eaten up by home runs last year, 23.6% home run per fly ball. So his xFIP was 3.45. So that's not that bad, but it definitely, especially in dynasty leagues, Leon is very interesting now. Overall, I think that, you know, like you said, Joe, it's an upgrade for Grichuk. He'll get playing time now, better ballpark. You know, it's sad for your boy Teoscar Hernandez, Van. I shed a tear when that trade came through. So yeah, between Granderson and Grichuk, it's going to be tough to see Teoscar Hernandez do too much this year. And Anthony Alford too, who's one of my favorite minor league outfield prospects in all of baseball. It seems like that's going to push him back another year as well. But for the Cardinals, it does open up some potential at bats for my boy Jose Martinez, which makes me very happy. And like you said, puts Harrison Bader on the map in deeper leagues at least, but he'll still probably need an injury to find any real playing time. But with that, let's move on to our first segment, ADP Wars.
War has changed. It's no longer about nations, ideologies, or ethnicity.
Instead, it's more about a laser show out in Baston, Pedroia.
I wrote down Mazzara here, and I disagree with myself.
I'm gonna give a slight edge to Eric Hosmer.
Well, you can't make us sound any dumber than we already do. Okay, our first segment here in the shortstop centric preview that we are doing today is going to be ADP Wars. And of course, this is players who are right next to each other in Fantrax average draft position. We're using just Fantrax ADP for this exercise. And so we're going to start off with our first matchup. We're going to go with which one would you rather draft, Joe? We've got Jean Segura at ADP 69 or Xander Bogaerts a few picks behind him at 80. Who are you going with, Jean Segura or Xander Bogaerts?
Well, I think Bogaerts is getting a bad rap because I think he was a little disappointing last year, and rightfully so. I don't think he quite reached the level of expectation that some people had for him, but it doesn't mean that he's done. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden Xander Bogaerts is a waste of space. If you go peel into it, you know, he's a guy that could certainly hit 300. I mean, he still scored 94 runs. He still stole 15 bases. He's still a very useful player. I think, you know, in the Black Book, they're actually right back to back. And in terms of percentage points, they're neck and neck. Bogaerts has the slight edge, just a slight one, because he's got a little bit more of a track record, a little bit more upside, I think, too. Potential power-wise, I don't know how much I really buy the Segura power from a couple years ago. I think what it comes down to is this. In head-to-head roto category leagues, I would take Jean Segura because that speed does make a difference on a weekly basis. Outside of that, in season-long roto and in head-to-head points, I'd probably still lean Bogaerts just slightly.
Yeah, and you know, this one was semi-tricky for me just because Segura really did prove that that one year that he just absolutely sucked was all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes with his daughter and personal stuff, because he's actually had a couple of really successful seasons that have shown that he has a lot of potential and obviously is a stolen base threat. Last year, I was shocked he only got to 22. He was in 566 plate appearances, but that's still a little bit more than Bogaerts did. I think in a full season, he had 635 plate appearances and had 15 steals. I think I'm going to go Bogaerts here. He's younger. He's 25. And for me, a real big descriptor in if I'm going to take one guy over the other is what's their OBP. Even in a batting average league, for the most part, I like guys who walk a lot more simply because when they struggle, they're still going to get on base and they're still going to score some runs. And you hear me say it all the time, and that's what I think. And to be honest, I don't know what kind of player Xander Bogaerts is. He's kind of shown a lot of power sometimes. He's shown pretty good speed sometimes. I don't know what he's going to provide, but he's so young, and I think he's still athletic and talented that no matter what, kind of like Kipnis was a few years ago, you're going to get some value out of him. And I think he's going to do enough to make the pick worthwhile, particularly when it's only, 11 picks behind Gene Segura. I'll take that in a heartbeat. So I'm definitely going to go with Bogaerts here.
I'm going to follow you guys and go Bogaerts too. And this is probably, of all the ones we've done of all the positions, this is probably the toughest one for me to figure out who it is. And I think Xander Bogaerts is a guy that I just kind of prefer anyway in drafts. And I think that, I think the speed might be a little more consistent with Segura. I mean, they're going to hit at similar places in the lineup. When you go down the stat line, essentially everything looks pretty similar, pretty equal. I will say, though, I would like to see if the Red Sox finally bite and sign JD Martinez. I'd like to see him hit behind Xander Bogaerts in that lineup. I'd love to see him hitting in front of him, and that would definitely give him a little more of a bump in my book. But I still do like him a little bit. And one of the things that, as I looked through everything, it came down, I looked a little bit at just the ballparks they hit in. And obviously, Safeco is going to be a way further down the list as far as hitter-friendly places than Fenway is. So I'm going to go with Xander here too.
All right. Well, I'll be the lone dissenter then and go with Gene Segura. No, he's my boy.
Nate. Yes.
Oh, come on. Okay. Steals are harder to find than a Tide Pod in Joe's laundry room. So I think that Segura has the advantage there. So I'm gonna lean slightly with him. His ass is getting bigger by the year, so I don't know if I'd expect much more than 20 steals. So it's not like I don't think that he's really far apart from Bogaerts in that regard, but I still feel safer with what Segura gives me than sort of banking on a bounce back from Bogaerts. And it could be that a lot of Bogaerts' struggles last year did stem from a wrist injury. There's been some speculation on that, and I am optimistic on a bounce back, but you're probably not looking at much more value, even if he bounces back, than I think what you're almost assured to get with Segura, aside from, a little bit less power with Segura. And don't forget that Segura's 11 homers and 22 steals last year, that came in just 125 games. So there's reason to believe that he can improve on his 2017 numbers as well. So I'm going to stick with my boy Segura there. But we will move on to our second matchup, and that is going to be Tim Anderson at pick 185 versus Orlando Arcia, one pick behind him at 186 overall. Joe, who you got here, Tim Anderson or Orlando Arcia?
No, it's Arcia for me, and this one wasn't close. You know, Anderson's one of these guys that, unfortunately, this happens a lot in the fantasy community where we want guys to happen now, and it's not fair because the White Sox, especially, they're an organization that's been just notorious for rushing guys. I mean, they just fly, whether it's Sale or Rodon, or it doesn't matter. I mean, they just, who is it? What, would you just draft them? Let's put them in the big leagues. I mean, that's what they do. And it sucks because they've really stunted the growth of some very high end potential prospects. And Anderson's another one where he's learning on the job. I mean, the OBP needs to increase. If the on-base percentage doesn't increase, then he's going to be back in AAA again. He had 234 against righties last year. That's just something that will not do. You can't have that happen. But he did it 320 against lefties, so all is not lost. The steal potential is there. All that's there. Arcia is just the more complete hitter. He's the higher profile prospect. He has the better hit tool. He has all the things that you want. Arcia is a guy I think you can count on for a 15-15 season right now. I don't care if Anderson has more upside for steals. If you can't get on base, you can't steal. You can't steal first. The old adage is that. So that's still very true. And I look at Arcia too. He plays in a good home ballpark. Now he's got some issues too. He's got hit better against lefties. Just a 626 OPS against lefties last year. That's not great, obviously. But we're talking still about a very young kid. He's starting to be a guy that I think, if he hits in the right spot in the order, a lot can change for him. But I think 15-15 is a very reasonable expectation for him even this season.
Do you guys remember a scant 5 minutes ago when I said that you should really take a look at the player who can take some more walks? Well, that's going to be a little bit prevalent here because Tim Anderson walked 2.1% of the time. That is insane. And this wasn't a
you know, 150 plate appearance cup of coffee. This was a 600 plate appearance season. He walked 2.1% of the time. That's horrendous. And yes, he's young. Yes, he's raw. He did hit 17 homers. He did steal 15 bases. But I don't care. I mean, he's just too raw for me. And Arcia, I really do think, can be something special. He had less plate appearances, but he had 15 homers, stole 14 bases. He walked 6.6% of the time, which isn't elite, but it's still pretty good, especially compared to 2.1% of the time for Tim Anderson. So it's definitely Arcia for me, and you're going to hear some more about him from me later on in the show, because I really like him. He does strike out less than 20% of the time, so he's got a pretty good ability with the bat. And I think there's some big things coming in his future. So, Arcia all the way.
Van, what was Tim Anderson's walk rate again?
Let me think. Oh, I already forgot. It was 2.1.
That's not very good.
No, I don't think so. Based on the tone of my voice, I one would guess it isn't.
Yeah, so that was part of my argument too. And when you look at, I don't know if I've seen any prospect at any level have one that's that low. And he did that at the major league level, like you said, at 600 plate appearances. So the other thing you have to add into that as well, and we always have to get this in at least one time in every show, when you look at the K rate, is the other half of the story. When you've got a guy like Tim Anderson, I look at him and I think he kind of profiles in my book as a stolen base, run scored guy. But if you have that 276 OBP and you're striking out with that 26.7 K rate, which is too damn high, we can't have it. Not having it. It's Arcia for me all across the board. The park is better. I like the lineup better around him. I mean, I think the ceiling is way higher. He's got the K rate at 18%, which is way further down, 324 OBP. And I think the speed profile is just as good, if not better, than Anderson. It's going to be right there. And I don't, like you said, I don't think 15-15 is out of the question. I think there could be a little run at 20-20 there as well. So it's Arcia for me all the way.
Y'all are so superficial with your OBPs. Gotta see right past that. I've actually gonna split it a little bit here, because if it's a points league, I'm definitely going with Arcia because of that horrendous play discipline. But if it's standard roto, I think I might just go with Tim Anderson. It's just straight 5x5 with batting average and stolen bases. So then you're not too worried about that horrible, atrocious walk rate. And I think aside from that, they're pretty even as far as runs, RBI opportunities. They're both probably going to be toiling away towards the bottom of the lineup. I think Tim Anderson, I don't know if he has a lot more power than Arcia, but I feel a little bit more confident in him hitting for power. And then the stolen base upside, I know, Joe, you touched on that very briefly. Yeah, you can't steal first, and so there's that. So hopefully he can get that average or on base up a little bit more. But he was 15 for 16 last year in stolen base attempts. So I think that he can steal well over 20 bases this season. And correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he, sort of like Gene Segura a couple years ago, didn't he deal with some personal tragedy as well? And he lose like his best friend?
It was something. Yeah, it wasn't quite as drastic as what happened to Segura, but I know it was very trying on him for whatever it was that occurred.
Right. So I think that in addition to sort of being thrown into the fire at yet a young age, could have contributed to a little bit of a lackluster season there. So straight roto, I'm going Tim Anderson. Every other format, I'm going with Arcia. I'm going to be a dick like that. Sorry. I'm going to be that guy. And we're going to move on to our last matchup now. And this is a first for the Nasty Cast. It's a three-way, baby.
Whoa.
Ow. Oh, yeah, girl.
Cue the Marvin Gaye. We've got Addison Russell versus Jorge Polanco versus Marcus Semien. A veritable menage a trois. Addison Russell is at pick 243. Jorge Polanco is at 246. And Marcus Semien is at 247. I couldn't pick just two of these guys since they were right next to each other. All these guys really interest me. And so, Joe, I'm very eager to get your opinion on who you're drafting out of these three guys.
Well, I'm looking at the man in the middle. I like Polanco out of these three guys. To me, he's that slightly lesser version of Arcia. You know, somewhere around the 15-15 potential is there. I think he surprised a lot of people. Another higher-end prospect. The Twins farm system is pretty good, and I don't think people realize that. He had 30 doubles last year, and to me, the big one for him was he struck out just 78 times. So for a young player to do that, that's very encouraging. The final 2 months for him were very good. He had 10 home runs and scored 28 runs, drove in 42. Now, I know September is built into that, and I get that, you know, there's call-ups and whatnot, but still, I mean, that's encouraging that a young player didn't wear down. It's encouraging that he finished strong. It's good for his confidence. You know, a 15-15 with a 260 season, I think, is very, very reasonable for him. The problem with the other two guys is Addison Russell still, you know, it's funny, coming up, he was an all-glove kind of guy. All of a sudden, he drove in 90 runs a couple years ago, and everyone, wow, this is amazing. But everything broke right, and that offense was just otherworldly that year. So he had so many opportunities. Last year, it marginalized and came back to normal, and all of a sudden, so did Addison Russell's, you know, stats across the board. So for me, Russell's one of those guys that I'm still not sure what he is. I don't love him this year at all. I mean, hitting 230, yeah, maybe he'll pop you 15 home runs, but to me, it's those secondary stats. And then there's Semien, who you saw some positive things. The trouble is the defense. The trouble is, will he stay there all year? What kind of role is he going to be in? Barreto's there, you know, and if Franco Barreto comes on, then there's always that chance that Semien could be a guy on the move. You know how much Oakland likes to flip guys. And I definitely think that he's somebody at 27, that this is a very big make or break season for Semien. He's fine. I have no problem with taking him. But to me, Polanco is the clearest in terms of, I think I know what he is. I think I know his role in the team. And I think I know where he's going to hit in the order and everything in between. And to me, I'll take that guy in the middle. And I think that he has the best chance to give me a full season's worth of quality production.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm just finally done with Addison Russell, which basically means he's going to break out this year. He is just 20, he's 24, so he's a puppy, so he's got plenty of time to come back. But I'm done, you know, wasting picks and hoping for the best. I'll let it happen before I move on it. Polanco and Semien, then, are kind of what it boils down to. And to be honest, I want to say Jorge Polanco, but there's just something I don't like about him. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is at all. So I think I'm going to lean Semien on this one. I know he was hurt last year, and if we look at his previous couple of years, we basically have a 250, 310, 440 hitter who basically provides quite a bit of power, but he stole quite a few bases last year in 386 plate appearances. He got to his 12 stolen bases. So over a full season, that's 18, 20, something like that. So I think you're going to get some pretty good counting stats. If he gets a full season and performs to the top of his peak, he could hit 25 home runs and steal 20 bases, which I think is pretty nice. That said, I think Polanco is probably the safer pick, but at this point in the draft, I probably want to get something, you know, maybe a little more upside wise. So I'll go with Semien overall, but I do like Polanco too, and won't fault anyone who takes him here.
Yeah, I'm going to take Polanco by a little bit. I'm not opposed to taking Marcus Semien either. And one of the things that I like about Polanco is the fact that he's a pretty decent value for where you're getting him. You know, I know these guys are all, you know, they all have this similar ADP, but I like the potential of the double digit steals. I like the potential of the power that's there. I like the fact that the lineup around him is getting better. You know, Joe kind of alluded to the fact that they do a pretty solid job of managing prospects and bringing them up and having them be successful. Would like to see a little higher than a 278 BABIP though, but I do like the 14% K rate. The other two guys, Addison Russell for me is a guy that for some reason I almost get baited into taking him just because I'm hoping that that breakout's there, but I don't know, he's kind of up and spinning his wheels, and I don't know if it's really ever going to happen. And the thing about, especially with the Cubs, is there's no pressure for them to have to stick him in the lineup with the offense that they have. I don't know necessarily if they have to really force him in there. They can put him on the bench. They could send him down. They could trade him maybe for a pitching piece. So I don't think that there's that urgency there for them to have to get huge production out of him, which on the other side of it, if he is a true glove guy like Joe says, then maybe they can just have him at the bottom of the lineup in there for his defense, and they don't really have to worry about him ever evolving because, you know, the glove doesn't really help us so much in fantasy. So I would say I put him last. I put Semien in a close second, but I think that Polanco is the guy that I like just for where you're going to get him and what you could potentially get from him. And I think Semien too, you know, like Joe alluded to also, Franklin Barreto's back there. We've talked about him a little bit. Wouldn't shock me if Marcus Semien gets moved at some point to give Barreto the full-time gig. Because if you see more of the same like we've seen out of Franklin Barreto, he's tearing up pitching, you know, at AAA. He needs to get brought up and just thrown in the fire and just to see what they have in him. And you can't do that with Semien there.
Okay, hold on real quick. This is it. This is the moment I've been waiting for. Because we have Nathan, who has a big old boner for Marcus Semien, or at least he used to. And He has Jorge Polanco, who's on his famous Twins. So which way does it go? We know it's not going to be Russell. So who is it, Nate?
Van, you know me all too well. I'm going Simeon, baby.
Ah, two for two.
Yes. And don't forget about, to perhaps the detriment of Simeon's playing time. Don't forget about Jorge Mateo, who's down on the farm now. And he might get called up and play center field. Of course, they've got Boog Powell out there in center field. He's a real roadblock.
He's caught in that lagoon sometimes, but we'll see.
Poog Lagoon?
The Poog Lagoon.
Did I see correctly that Jorge Mateo, now maybe I saw this wrong, but the MLB pipeline is starting to unveil the top prospects. Did I see where he's ranked in the top 10?
Really?
Maybe I read that wrong. Maybe I saw something wrong, but I thought I saw that somewhere.
That should be like at the position, maybe.
Like overall top 100, he was in the top 10?
Let me look. Now I'm doubting myself.
I think you're making stuff up. He spent far too much time in the Poog Lagoon, and your brain's all scrambled. You need to eat some Tide Pods, and you're not normal.
I ate too many Cascade dishwasher detergent pods.
There's your problem. Go for the cheap stuff.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
That's like drinking the Flavor-Aid instead of the Kool-Aid.
Right? all right, so, you know, overall, like having all three of these guys down here, sort of in the dregs of like what will even be drafted in 10 and 12 team leagues, makes me pretty content to wait for middle infield this year. I feel like all these guys are pretty solid options. Like, you know, like you said, we've been waiting for Russell to break out forever, but he's still only 24. Improved his strikeout rate last year, made more contact, but still just played only 110 games because he got hurt. If he's healthy for a full season, he could push 20 homers, you know, mediocre batting average around 250, but he's not going to steal you a ton of bags. And Polanco, he really came on in the second half of 2017. And he, you know, I watched a lot of Twins games. He really just looked like a completely different hitter at the plate. The balls started falling for him that didn't in the first half and should have been. He's kind of getting BABIP to death in that first half. And you could really see the confidence in him in the second half of the season. Not a burner, but, you know, 15-15, I think, you know, like Joe said, that's a good possibility for him. And that's going to give him the tiebreaker over Russell. You know, I think he does have even more batting average upside from 256. He might even hit 270, 280 if he can get back to hitting a little bit more line drives and maybe some fewer balls in the air. I think that's actually a little bit detrimental to his profile overall because he doesn't have a ton of raw power. But you know, then there's Marcus Semien. He was on my list of sleepers last year, and he will be there again after injuries limited him to just 85 games. He pretty much missed the whole first half. But like you said, Van, 12 for 13 in stolen base attempts over that span. So he could push 20 in a full season. And 20 home runs is easily on the docket. You know, he's done it before. So I think you could have a 2020 season with a 250 average. And there's no reason to think that he'll be hitting anywhere besides like first or second in that lineup. It's not like it's a great lineup. So, you know, I think that also gives him a bit of an advantage over the other guys who will probably be hitting towards the bottom of their lineups. So give me Marcus Semien, the cheapest of the three. So now that that is decided, we're going to take a quick break and come back with some bargains, busts, and sleepers. What is love? Baby, don't... Nasty.
Don't... Nasty. No more. Hey, everybody, it's me, Joe Pizzapia. Baseball is back. And so is the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018 edition. This year, I've got Paul Spohr doing the starting pitching chapter. I've got Jake Seeley doing outfield profiles. I've got Sammy Reed doing DFS. We got championships waiting for you. Go get it right now. The Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018, available on Amazon in paperback and for Kindle and on iTunes. Because once you go Black Book, well, you know the rest.
All right, we have returned, and we're going to start off with bargains at the shortstop position. Joe, we shall start with you. Who, in your eyes, is a bargain at the shortstop position this year?
Well, it's funny. The guy we were just talking about in Polanco, I mean, I just basically told you, and in the Black Book I said the same thing, where he is pretty much 90% of what you're going to get out of Arcia, but look at the difference in ADP, right? Because Arcia was a little highly touted prospect and people were a little higher on him. And I mean, he is not, you know, 60 picks better. So if you could fade down there, there's a guy certainly you could get. You know, Tim Beckham, I think everybody next year, you know, from last year was looking at, you know, the numbers he put up at Camden Yards, which were insane. You know, 321, 368, and a 530 slash. I mean, that was a phenomenal slash. Question is, you know, can he keep that pace up at least at home? And if he can over a full season, doesn't matter how good he is on the road. I mean, that's some spectacular production. It really comes down to where he hits in the order. If he hits first or seventh, I prefer first. Give me him up in the top of the order. Give me those runs scored. Give me the extra volume of at bats. I think that would help Beckham's productivity. But I'll tell you a guy who's off the radar for me is Freddie Galvis, another guy who, you know, very quietly last year, he had 12 home runs and stole 14 bags. And Freddie Galvis is not a sexy pick. Freddie, nobody in your league is going to go, oh, nice, you know, when you pick Freddie Galvis.
People hate Freddie Galvis.
They should. But but here's the thing, though. The dirty little secret is he's going to be the everyday guy in San Diego. He's got a little power, a little speed. If you're in a deep league and you want to basically have a responsible punt in the middle infield spot, a guy like Freddie Galvis is going to do more for your fantasy team than some of these other guys that you're going to take flyers on who are going to have injury issues or, you know, maybe just completely drop out, like a guy like a Tim Anderson who completely fall out of favor and next thing you know, he's back in AAA. So, you know, those kind of guys, just don't forget about them, because you don't think about the name. Look at the stats, what they can offer you, because, you know, people will be high again on Raul Mondesi Jr. this year, just like they were high on Tim Anderson. He could very well just fall flat on his face again.
Yeah, and you know, one guy, I'm going to be a bit of a homer here, that I don't think is getting too much love is Angels shortstop Andrelton Simmons. He was kind of had a weird offensive profile for a while there. He hit a bunch of homers one season, never really stole a whole lot except in the minors. Always just amazing defense, and just see what you get out of him. Well, last year he kind of put it together, hit 278, 331, 421, 14 homers, 19 stolen bases. And I don't see any reason at age 28 that he couldn't either repeat on that or gain on that, actually. So I think if he has a little bit more of a power uptick or maybe a little more BABIP fortune, because he only had a 291 BABIP, maybe if that goes to 310, he hits 290. You know, so I think he's at 14th, kind of a little undervalued. I'd take him over Zach Cozart, just because I don't know if Cozart's breakout last year was as legitimate as Simmons, who's just this ultimate athlete, his ability to just have an all-around pretty good year. So I really like Andrelton Simmons this season, and I could see him taking, or I could see myself taking him in a handful of drafts too.
I kind of know what Nate felt like last week, because I've had Tim Beckham gone, sniped. I've had couple other guys here that you mentioned snipe, so I won't go down the list here. But I kind of cheated a little bit, because a couple of my guys here are players that are going to be shortstop eligible but aren't really going to be playing shortstop. And Van, you mentioned Andrelton Simmons. I think Zach Cozart's a guy going right there that if you're looking for some pop a little bit later on, if you've waited on shortstop or you're looking to throw somebody in at utility or middle infield, he's a guy who can get you 25 homers. He doesn't steal a lot, so I wouldn't look at a ton of steals there. I mean, you know, two or three, obviously not a whole hell of a lot. So power is mainly what you're going to get from him. Another guy that I've got on there as well that will definitely not play shortstop but could still get you something if you can stash him a little bit is Gleyber Torres. And I think he'll be healthy. I think they're going to go ahead and stash him at the minors for a little bit, just make sure he's ready to come up instead of bringing him up early and then having a setback and having to send him back down or put him on the DL, so they can afford with the abundance of offense they have in that lineup to bring him along fairly slowly. So I think Glaber's a guy you might want to stash. And then we mentioned him earlier, but I'm going to throw him out there again. And Jorge Polanco is a guy that I had out here as well that still, you know, for all the reasons that we mentioned earlier. But I mean, when you're looking at, like I said, around pick 250, the 18th shortstop off the board, I think that's excellent value for potential 20 home runs and 15 steals there for Polanco.
You know what you're saying too? I'm just if I can interject a second, you know, what happens here is, you know, there aren't a lot of these kind of guys, which tells you a lot about this position. There's a lot of top tier, big time shortstops available right now offensively. And then there's a pretty decent mid tier. So it is one of those things where that's one of those positions, if you don't account for it, you're going to be behind some other teams in your league. So it's something to really pay attention to. And it's kind of coming out in this conversation.
Oh, yeah. But I have a question to tack on. You mentioned Zach Cozart. Why is he good? What did he do? Nothing really in his profile is that much.
Well, he was good a couple years ago, and that's exactly what I looked.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I looked at. I was trying to look across the stat line, and there's not, like, I like the home runs that you would get at that ADP if you need them. And I like, you know, the change to go to a little bit better of a lineup. But yeah, I was trying to, honestly, it's funny you say that, because I was trying to look for things to prop up my argument a little bit more. And that
not
was
a lot.
Yeah, that's about all I had was the fact that you're going to get pop late. And, you know, if you want to wait a little bit and get that upside as far as the home runs. But yeah, you're dead on with that. The only other thing that I could find was, I mean, 385 OBP is solid. I don't know if that's sustainable, but other than that, yeah, not a whole hell of a lot there except for the home runs.
Yeah, I just think moving from Great American Small Park to, you know, the gigantic Angels Stadium is going to probably sap his home runs a little bit. And I'm not even sure that he was going to hit another 24 anyway. Like, really, the only difference that I see is he got a lot more patient at the plate. He did, you know, swung it less overall, so, you know, chased out of the zone a little bit less. But that didn't really even feed into his hard contact rate. It was actually lower than it was in 2016. So, I don't know. I'm not totally convinced on Zach Cozart being, you know, at least this level. So he'd be, I'd lean towards him being a little bit more of a bust to me than a bargain. But that's just me personally. My bargains, we're going to skim over because we already talked about them. It's Semien and Polanco. And by the way, if anybody out there, if you've never really watched the Twins a lot or seen Jorge Polanco play, he cracks me up just because his eyes are so big. He always looks like he's just seen a ghost. And it just, it makes me smile all the time. He looks like he's just terrified. So he's really fun to watch. But anyway, we shall move on to our busts. And Joe, we'll start with you again. We'll give you the honors. Who are your busts at the shortstop position this year?
All right, get ready. The red flags. I do this at every position there, you know, those red flag guys. And I'm going to start with one who I'm sure, you know, will be controversial. He was my number one red flag at shortstop last year, and he's back there again. It's very exciting. It's Trevor Story. I understand the 24 home runs and 82 RBI. I get, you know, it's terrific. Everybody loves it. The problem is he still struck out 191 times. The OBP is still 308. You know, the batting average is low. He doesn't score a lot of runs because he can't get on, which is a shame. He hit only 216 against righties. His road OPS was 723. He is such a Coors friendly guy, and he's just not that good on the road. My problem is, what if he struggles at Coors? What if he struggles somewhere else? What if some bottom drops out? And I get that there's power there, and I understand that, but to me, it's not the trade-off I want to make. If I want power at this position, I'll go pay up for, you know, the top tier of guys. And if I'm not going to pay up for them, then give me guys like, you know, like a Didi Gregorius, who I think is a legitimate power guy now. I'd rather have those kind of guys on my team that aren't going to suck me dry in the other spots where they're going to bring down batting average in Roto, or they're going to strike out a ton and kill you in the points leagues. People get tantalized by the power, but I'll tell you what, a guy like Trevor Story for me is a huge red flag still, even this year.
Okay, if you don't mind, I'm going to interject right here because, well, I don't care. Trevor Story, he was on my list too, right? And I said almost the exact same thing. Like, if I want that kind of power, I'll just wait 25 picks for Paul DeJong, who I feel slightly
absolutely
better about.
100%.
But the reason that I wanted to butt in actually is because you said that Didi Gregorius to you is a proven power hitter. It blows my mind how he hit 25 home runs last year with a 23% hard contact rate. That should be physically impossible.
It should be, but if you go back and you look, Nate, about what he did in 2016 in the second half, it was all there. So when I wrote about him in last year's Black Book in 2017, I said, what you saw in the second half last year is for real. Something's clicked with this guy. And being in the New York area, you know, I'm not a Yankees fan, but I do, you know, watch a fair amount of baseball regardless, and I get to see a lot of Yankees. And watching the at-bats he took and watching him hit the ball, I knew what I was seeing with Didi Gregorius was a different version of Didi. And it was just clicking. And last year, I understand, you know, he started, you know, because of the injury, he missed some time. But, you know, 25-87, he's giving you the same kind of power numbers. So that's why, you know, as great as deep stats are, you got to take deep stats, you got to take sabermetrics, you got to take all this stuff, RPV like in the Black Book, and you also got to put the eye test to it too. You got to see these guys, you got to look at footage. And if you have a question, like you said, about a guy like this, how did he do this with this? Go back and watch the footage, and it'll tell you a lot. And, you know, I understand not everybody can do that and look at it. And if you didn't play baseball, you know, different levels, there's certain things you're looking for, you can't see or whatnot. But for me, a guy like Didi, that is a guy in a great lineup, in a great ballpark, who showed all the makings of being legitimate, turning the corner. And he did. And last year he turned it for the whole season. So that's why, you know, sometimes it's the combination of all those elements.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough. I, I won't rebut. I'm just
believe
gonna
have me. To... Nobody thought DD was going to be more of a useless fantasy entity his entire career than me. Believe me, I did. And then that second half of 2016, I'm watching him and I'm watching the at bats and I'm watching the. You know, I understand that maybe it doesn't come up in the rates, but it, you could see the hard contact, you could hear the hard contact, and you could see what he was doing, and you could see that, you know, the launch angle was different, things he was doing was different, and you would see breakdowns about his swing too on the local broadcast, and what you were seeing with DD was a revolution for him.
Well, clearly it's working. It's still going to be so damn hard for me to buy into him, but I'll accept that he's good now, I guess. All right. Ben, sorry to derail us, but go ahead.
Oh, I'm allowed to go now, am I? I see how it is. No.
All right, Ron, on to you.
Thanks. So I'm going to...
Okay, so my main guy, and I wrote two down. I'll just briefly mention the second one, but my main guy plays very close to me, and his name is Paul DeJong. You mentioned him. I want zero to do with Paul DeJong. You know why? Because I saw exactly this happen with the Cardinals with Aledmys Diaz. He was another guy who came up with good power, who didn't walk very much, who somehow just hit for a decent average, but was also a really bad shortstop. And I think DeJong is going to be the exact same player. I do not for one bit believe that this whole power surge of him hitting 25 home runs is too legit. I think he has power. I just don't think it's this good. And to be honest, if he's in the minors in May, kind of like they did with Aledmys Diaz, that's not going to surprise me, just because I do not like anything about this guy. So, and what is he, like 29? Like, he's old. No, he's not. He's 24. But still, I just don't like his profile. The other guy I kind of want to mention, and whom I actually like, is Ahmed Rosario of the Mets. I just don't see him doing a lot this year. I've just got kind of a bad feeling about him. He's primarily, for me, going to be a stolen base batting average guy. I just don't know if he does it this year. I think the average doesn't quite click, and maybe that means he doesn't get on base as much, which we only walked 1.8% of the time in his brief call-up this year. So I don't know. I'm just kind of wary of Ahmed Rosario, who's being picked at 15th overall. I'd rather take a couple of guys past him, but definitely for me, Paul DeJong at 10th, no thank you.
All right, so a couple things here. Number one, I love me some D.D. Gregorius across the board here. He's one of my favorite guys this year. I love him. The guys that hit ahead of him in that lineup, I'm more than stoked to be able to keep him in one of my keeper leagues for $2. Yeah, so I like me that. I know you don't like him. And the other thing is, we're talking about Freddie Galvis. You know, Joe, you said that Freddie Galvis is not that sexy. I find him very sexy, actually. So. Want to throw that out there as well. Now I had him on my bus. I had Paul DeJong for the same reason, is because he's one of these guys that I'm really kind of perplexed about, because I don't really know what to expect from him. I don't really know if he's going to be able to sustain the batting average. We talked all year last year about his insane K rate and his insanely low walk rate, and that was something that he was not seeming to improve. I mean, he improved a little bit as the year went on, but I don't know what you're going to get. And you know, it's funny to hear that a Cardinals prospect that's coming up is actually under the age of like 29, 28 years old. So that was a little.
That's why I thought he was like 28. All these Cardinals prospects are.
You're thinking of Jose Martinez.
Well, right.
Yeah.
He doesn't really fit their profile of successful prospects anyway, so he's got that working against him just because of age. My main one here, though, is, and I want to throw this number out here, my guy, as far as a bus, is Elvis Andrus. And I'm throwing him out there because when you look at the numbers he put up last year, when you look at the home run total of 20, and when you add up, anybody care to take a guess for his previous 8 seasons how many total home runs he hit?
18.
A little bit higher than that.
22.
A little bit higher than that.
27?
35.
35.
Okay. 8 seasons. He hit 20 last year. So it's hard for me to believe and buy into a guy that goes all of a sudden from hitting 2 homers, 7 homers, 8 homers, and hits 20. So I don't know if that – I've never been a big Elvis Andrus guy anyway. Now, the 20-plus steals are nice, but if you look at the stolen bases ever since 2009, he has – the 2013 where he had 42. Other than that, they're pretty much on the decline. He plays a lot of games, so he is durable. He's got a couple of 90-run seasons there, 100-run season last year, but it's just hard for me to buy in because I don't know if the 2020 is going to be there again this year, along with the 88 RBIs as well. So he's probably my guy that I'm going to probably stay away from more than anybody else this spot.
His walk rate took a pretty big hit last year, too. It fell to 5.5% of the time, which isn't necessarily atrocious, but from previous years where he's walking 7, 8% of the time, that's kind of an interesting decline, seeing as how his value technically went up. So maybe that explains a little bit of the homer boost, but you're right. I don't necessarily believe that 20 is really his number.
No.
Yeah, he got a little bit more aggressive last year, that's for sure. And I'm not really buying him at that ADP either, but at least, you know, I've been low on him for years and years, actually. But at least now he's slotted to hit a little bit higher in the lineup. You know, so you get the runs in RBI as opposed to when he was hitting seventh and you're looking at, like, you know, 60, 70 runs in RBI, that kind of thing. And he's always good for steals. So at least there's that. And we already went over mine. It was Trevor Story and Didi Gregorius sucks. Moving on to deep sleepers at the shortstop position. That is the Fantrax ADP outside of the top 30. So deep, deep guys here. Joe, start us off. You got any deep sleepers for us at shortstop?
You know, I wish I really had somebody right off the bat, you know, because I think a guy like Barreto is the guy that, you know, is probably the next up. And, you know, can a guy like a Kettle Marte make a run and maybe take that job? Yeah, it's possible. But, you know, I don't want to be a bummer here on the podcast, but I don't see anybody coming up. Well, okay, here's the one that I'll give you. If you're buying into bounce backs, give a shot to Dansby Swanson, because I think his draft stock is an all-time low. And this was a pretty darn good player in college. There's a lot of people point to a lot of different reasons of why he bottomed out last year. But, I mean, he's way too young to give up on. And if you're in a deeper, you know, keeper dynasty kind of league situation, yeah, I mean, he's just floating around there. You could just pluck him off a roster from somebody else as a throw-in and see what he is. Because, to me, that kind of skill set was almost like a – if you're looking at stat lines, just thinking about stats, not exactly about player comps, but just stat line comps, to me, he was like a potential Dustin Pedroia-esque kind of guy at his peak. And last year was just a brutal season. And then Albies came in and you know, kind of bumped him around. So for me, looking at Swanson, there's a guy whose, you know, ADP is going to be rock bottom. But outside of that, there's not a lot. Some of the youth you saw take positions last year. You saw Arcia. You saw the Andersons. You saw the Polancos. You saw even a little bit of Barreto. So for me, there's not a lot of those guys out there left in the turnover this year. It's kind of a weird year at the position. But there is a guy like Dansby Swanson who is going to be given every opportunity to get himself back in the good graces. And for fantasy purposes, is going to cost you absolutely nothing to find out if he can.
Yeah, there's not a lot out there late in the deep part here. Go ahead, Nathan.
I was just going to make a stupid joke that when you said that Ozzy Albies came up and bumped him around a little bit, all I could think of was that Saturday Night Live sketch with Will Ferrell and Chris Kattan in there in the club, and
yeah,
they always find some lady to bounce him around.
Oh, yeah, the Butabi brothers, yeah.
Like
Albies and Freddie Freeman are just, like, bouncing poor Dansby Swanson in between them.
Poor Dansby the Mansby. What a shame. I like Dansby, too, so I'm with you on that one, Joe. But yeah, there's just not a whole lot out there when you get deep at the shortstop position. Unlike first base, which I felt like there were a lot of people out there that I could take a flyer on. So I think when I'm in this situation, what I'm really going to look at is who's going to get called up midseason, who could provide a bit of a bump. Franklin Barreto, that's a name you already mentioned, Joe, and he is likely going to play second base. But you don't know, maybe they bump Marcus Semien over and let Franklin play shortstop. Willy Adames of the Rays, I think, could probably make a bit of an impact. I don't think they call him up too early because it's the Rays we're talking about here, but I think he's ready for the majors. So if he gets called up, I think he could make a bit of an impact too and give your team a bit of a boost. But other than that, there's just not much out there for really, really deep sleepers.
Yeah.
My head's bobbing right now.
Oh, sorry, guys. I got my glow sticks out there real quick, and I was raving a little bit. So we got the guy that I had mainly, and it's a bit of a homer pick, but it's a bit of a guy that's hit at every level in the minors, and he's only 22. And I know, you know, the Rays don't rush guys up, but when you look at the depth chart in front of him at shortstop, he has Adeni Echevarria, and that's pretty much about it. And so I think it wouldn't be out of the question to see Willy Adames up at some point. He's a guy that could give you a little bit. And then another guy that I'm just kind of throwing a dart at is another one of Nate's boys here. And you could get maybe some extremely cheap power here if you need it later in, like, an AL-only league or a deeper league. I don't know, you know, how much how much he's going to be able to recreate the numbers from last year, because he, like Elvis Andrus, the homers jumped from 6 to 21 in 2017, but that's Eduardo Escobar, very, very late. So once again, guy that you could, you know, hit in a decent lineup. But once again, kind of like Zach Cozart, doesn't offer you a whole lot more than that. But he did have 73 RBI kind of out of nowhere as well. So he's a guy that I might look at a little bit later on as well. But Willy Adames is a guy that I'm trying to get everywhere, because I think he could definitely be seeing a call up sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it's very ugly after the ADP of 30 here at shortstop. I brought up Jorge Mateo earlier, so he would be a deep league stash. His ADP is 550. You know, if he gets a call sometime this year, he could steal you a ton of bases. Stole 52 bags in the minors last year. And Jordy Mercer, the Warhammer, he should have a job, I guess, at shortstop 39. So that's about it.
He's a body. He's a live body.
Exactly.
That's
who, who carries a large hammer, indeed. Oh, Joe, you don't know this either. So on my previous podcast called The Backup Catcher, I did with a friend of mine, we used to do a game called – oh, I don't remember what it was called. But anyway, the point of it was –
Sounds like a hell of a game, man.
Yeah, exactly. But the point of it was, if you go to baseballreference.com, you can see player nicknames. And a lot of them I've never heard before. So we would look up these nicknames and have the other person try to guess whose nickname that was, what player it was. So what I did one day is created 5 fake nicknames and tried to get my co-host to guess them, and he was just flustered because he couldn't figure any of them out. And the one that stuck was the Warhammer for Jordy Mercer. So it has been my goal in life to make Jordy Mercer known as the Warhammer. So I ask that you please continue that tradition and make him known as the true Warhammer.
Van Shipley, I shall continue this. So let it be done, so let it be, for I shall make Jordy Mercer the Warhammer, and he shall be the only man left in Pittsburgh when they're done trading off the crappy pieces.
Because he's not valuable enough to trade. But
no, he's not. He has no value but his hammer.
So what better way to end the show than that? Joe, thanks so much for joining us. Let everybody know where they can find you on social media, and plug anything and everything that you can possibly think of.
All right. Well, you can find me at Joe Pizzapia 17 on the Twitter machine. You can listen to me every day on Fantasy Sports Radio Network, which is free Fantasy Sports Radio. It's huge. It's great. It's on iTunes. It's on Stitcher. It's on iHeartRadio. On Targets every day, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern. The Fantasy Black Book show is every Sunday, 9 to 12 in the morning till noon Eastern there on Sundays. So we got a lot. Actually, Tim McLeod joins us on that show every single Sunday to talk fantasy baseball. And we cover everything, but it'll be very baseball heavy once we turn into February here. And obviously, the new Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018 with myself, Paul Spohr, Sammy Reed, Jake Seeley. Go get it on Amazon. Got it for Kindle, got it for paperback. It'll be on iTunes soon. But if you don't want to wait, just get the free Kindle app. It's glorious. Do all that. And don't steal Van's jokes, because he gets very mad if you do.
Excellent. All right. Thanks again, Joe. We'll be back next week previewing the hot corner, third base, with Jessica Kleinschmidt. So look out for that. And until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.